Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. The central question running throughout the whole of Plato's Republic is, what is justice? And early in Book 1, there's a rejection of two inadequate points of view. One put forward by Polemarchus that has to do with friends and enemies and isn't particularly thought through. And then a more robust and much more authoritarian one put forward by Thrasymachus, echoed, by the way, in another dialogue by Callicles in the Gorgias. And Socrates rejects that as well. And by Book 2, they want him to say, well, what is justice? We only really get to see what justice consists in Book 4 after a great deal of development has taken place in an ideal city that Plato says can function as a sort of analogy to the human being. So what consists in justice in the city will also be similar or analogous to justice within a human being, or as it's going to turn out, within a human soul. And they begin the sort of unveiling, if you'd like to call it, by talking about this principle that was acknowledged earlier after what the young interlocutors of Socrates call a tedious prologue. So Socrates says, listen and learn if there's anything in what I say. We laid down in the beginning as a universal requirement when we were founding our city. This, I think, or some form of this, is justice. What is that? It's that each person would perform one function, one thing in the state or the city for which their nature was best adapted. And so we've got people who are clearly gifted intellectually and can carry out the functions of rulership and go through the education that he's going to sketch out in the books yet to come. He also, you know, leaves room for the spirited, the aggressive soldier and protector class. And then there's this vast panoply of everybody else who are going to be citizens, and they engage in productive activities of one form or another. And there's kind of a hierarchy set in place, and that's going to be analogous to the soul. But the key thing here is that each person or each part does their job. They do the thing that not only is assigned to them, they do the thing that they're suited for. They use what lies within the realm of their talents, and even more importantly, they don't interfere in the workings of others. And that's one way to define injustice, is this meddlesome and, you know, impeding character of those who are always getting into everybody else's business and not handling their own, taking over functions that other people, or in the soul, other parts ought to be doing. And there's a really great formula of this said a little bit later. Having and doing what is one's own and what belongs to oneself. This notion of what is one's own, we use the word in English proper, my proper function, and it's a translation here of idion, that which is appropriate to oneself. It's what we also use for private property and things that are specific to a particular area or person or whatever else that we're talking about. So each person, if you're a cobbler, you cobble away. And you might know a little something about other arts that are connected to your own, but you don't tell everybody else what to do. You don't get into their business. You do your business well. What belongs to oneself? So everybody has their role and they stick to it. And so he says that this is what is just. He also says a carpenter undertaking to do the work of a cobbler or all these other things, that would be injurious. That's actually bad. That's interference. So what we have here is a conception of justice, but this doesn't get us to where we need to go yet, because we want to know, okay, what does justice look like in the soul then? How does a person interfere with themselves? So Plato has this tripartite notion of the soul in which we have a rational part, we have a spirited or energetic or aggressive, another great translation that I don't see in Plato, but I've seen in other works is the incandescent part. And then we have the appetitive or desirous part that's focused primarily on what we typically call creature comforts, pleasures of the body, but also interested in acquiring wealth. And it becomes interested in acquiring wealth precisely so that it can purchase the things that it wants. It also tends to want to avoid hardship or labor or things like that as well. So how does all this fit in with justice? He tells us, after going through a lot of derivation of these different parts of the soul, that what we can find in a human being is this three parts, and justice is going to be in a certain arrangement, or as he's going to say later on, a harmony between them. And we have to think, well, what is the function of these parts? What does it mean for each of them to do their job and not to usurp or interfere with the jobs of others? What is the rational part, if it's developed properly, what is it supposed to be doing? It judges. It makes judgments about things. This is good, this is bad. Now, of course, the other parts can judge as well. The spirited part can judge. Getting revenge on this person is good and I have to do it, right? Or that person wronged me. That's bad, right? The appetitive part has all sorts of judgments about good and bad. You know, eating as much as you can possibly jam into your belly. That's really good. The feeling of throwing up afterwards, not so good, right? That's bad. But then you can, you know, you've got room to put more in, don't you? You can see the appetitive part's judgments are not particularly well founded or well-grounded. So the rational part engages in judgment. It also thinks things through. It does a lot more thinking than these other parts do. I mean, we talk analogously about thinking with your stomach or thinking with your genitals, but it's not a lot of thought that's going on there, right? It reasons things out. It's the rational part, right? And it also issues commands. It tells the other parts what they ought to be doing in order for the human being to be good, to be doing well. Now, do the other parts listen? Well, that's really up to them, and that depends on how the individual has become habituated and oriented their parts within their soul. Are they integrated or in disharmony with each other? That's where we're going to get to justice. What is the spirited part supposed to do? So the spirited part is that with which Plato says we get angry. And he talks a good bit about anger in this section. And it's kind of worth thinking about what he says here. He says that on occasions we can observe when desires constrain a person contrary to their reason. So when the appetitive part is fighting with the rational part, the person reviles himself and is angry with that within which masters him. And as it were in a faction of two parties, the spirit of such a man becomes an ally of his reason. So when things are functioning well and your appetites want you to do something that you think is wrong and reason is telling you that, like say, you know, sleep with somebody that you're not supposed to sleep with or at a certain time when you're not supposed to be doing that or drink or eat more than you should or try to make a buck in order to enjoy all sorts of pleasures but do so in tawdry and disgusting ways. The rational part says, hey, don't do that, right? But the spirit, the appetitive part is like driving you around and the spirited part gets angry and says, don't do this garbage. What's wrong with you, right? And sometimes we have people talking to themselves in such a way. On the other hand, as he says, if the spirited or thumotic part makes common cause with the desires against the reason, when reason whispers low, thou must not, then we have a problem. So the spirited part is kind of in between and it can make a decision. Who am I going to line up with? Because the spirited part is the part that can really get stuff done. He also tells us, what about when we think we're wrong? If we believe that we're actually wrong and we judge our anger and our actions to be just, then we will, you know, suffer hunger, cold, and the like. We will, you know, that the appetites don't want us to deal with. We will follow through on that. But if the rational part is able to tell the spirited part, listen, I know you're riled up about this, but you're actually getting things wrong. That person didn't mean to wrong you, or what they did isn't really harming you. The spirited part becomes calm again. And so this is how the spirited part does its job. Its job is to protect us and also to listen to reason, so that reason can tell it what is good, and then it imposes reason's rule upon the appetites. And for Plato, this is really important. Without the spirited part contributing, the appetitive part is probably not going to listen to the rational part unless the person has already become very temperate, right? So he tells us that the spirited part is actually an ally to reason. And then we have this third appetitive part. How does it do its proper function? Well, you know, the things that it desires are not bad things in and of themselves. Eating is a good thing. We actually should desire to eat. If we don't, we're in trouble. But we don't need a desire to eat all the time, or dainties and sweets and things like that, or drinking more alcohol than is conducive to, say, lubricating social occasions, doing things at the wrong time. We get ourselves into all sorts of things in the appetitive part with sexual desire, and also in the pursuit of wealth. People will do all sorts of bad things that they know reason tells them is wrong, but the appetites also make their bidding and the person follows that. So we need temperance, and actually, you know, we need temperance in all parts of the soul, as Plato has said in this. And you can see that there's a close connection between temperance, so frosune, and justice, dikaia, right? He talks about there being a harmony between these three parts. And that's exactly the way that he talked earlier about temperance. So you might say, okay, well then how are justice and temperance really different from each other? Aren't they simply the same thing? Are they the same virtue? And the answer is no, because what justice consists in is this ordering here where there's rulership taking place, and these two parts are allies against the appetitive part, which is always at risk of, you know, growing too strong through self-indulgence. So that takes us beyond that, and that's what allows us as persons to do this, to stick with our own job, to not get involved in other people's business, to give other people what they deserve and take only what we ourselves deserve. The person, as Plato says, the person who actually has justice is a unity. They are one person, as opposed to the person who is unjust, who is really a discombobulated kind of person, many rather than one. So justice within the soul isn't located just in one section of the soul. It's located in the totality of it and in this ordering that takes place when reason tells us what to do and gets things right, and the spirited part helps to impress that upon the appetites, and the appetites obey. When we have that within our soul, we have the virtue of justice, which means that justice is a rather complex thing, and justice involves the entirety of the human person. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/Sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.